Hello, Zimbabwe. Welcome to Live Talk, The Connection. And we are coming to you live from Studio 7 at the Voice of America in Washington. And I'm your host, Evans Zininga. Today on Live Talk, The Connection, we are discussing youth migration. The ongoing COP29 conference in Baku, Azerbaijan, is also discussing climate action and solidarity. There are also high-level meetings on climate action for children and guardians of Earth, among others. But first, beyond promising a return to the America First doctrine, President-elect Donald Trump has not provided details on what U.S. foreign policy will look like under his incoming administration, but his early conversations with leaders following his election victory indicate he aims to fulfill his promises to quickly end the conflicts in the Middle East and Ukraine. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakoswara reports.
The war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and Russia's invasion in Ukraine will be the global backdrop as Donald Trump and his America First foreign policy returns to the White House.
Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people. We will make America safe, strong, prosperous, powerful, and free again.
Trump's term starts January 20th, but he has already spoken with world leaders, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Moscow denies reports that Trump has also spoken to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump campaigned on ending wars quickly. Analysts say he is eager to deliver.
When it comes to the Middle East, I think in some ways the message will be, hurry up and finish this war. For Ukraine, it's going to be stop.
Trump has never explained how he will make war stop, but often criticizes the billions of dollars of U.S. aid going to Ukraine. A rapid end to the war could mean major concessions by Kyiv, something Zelensky says is not likely to happen.
We want a just end to this war. I am sure that a fast end of war means losses.
With North Korea sending soldiers to help Moscow, the war in Ukraine could have broader geopolitical implications at a time of escalating tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Trump must also deal with Israel, which appears focused on maximalist aims rather than a ceasefire, not only with Hamas in Gaza, but also with Hezbollah in Lebanon, the war's second front. Both groups are proxies of Iran.
We see the Iranian threat in all its components and the danger it poses. We also see the great opportunities before Israel in the field of peace and its expansion.
Trump promised to be tough on trade, especially against China. In his congratulatory message to Trump, Chinese President Xi Jinping called for stable, healthy, and sustainable ties.
Xi Jinping pointed out that history has shown that China and the United States benefit from cooperation and suffer from confrontation.
Trump also promised to crack down on immigration, vowing to mass deport undocumented immigrants. On Monday, he moved on that promise, appointing Tom Homan, his former acting U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director, as incoming border czar. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
Now, talking of migration and climate change adaptation, Anna Wiebe moved to the United States from Ukraine 25 years ago. Four of her Ukrainian relatives fled the country and joined her after Russia invaded in 2022. They settled in North Carolina. But then Hurricane Helene arrived. Rafael Sakov has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
When we used to farm here, winter squash, basil, garlic, we had all kinds of things here. At some point, potatoes.
Ukrainian native Anna Wiebe has lived in North Carolina for over 20 years. After Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, her mom, sister, and her sister's husband and son came to join her. But when the remnants of Hurricane Helene caused massive flooding in late September, Wiebe's Ukrainian family was among the over 100 North Carolinians killed.
So water was rising from here and there and from the side. They couldn't get out in the woods. We got back again here, and the water still was high, but I already could see that obviously if they was here, I would be able to see the building or house. And I just got numb, and I was like, I don't see them. They're gone.
The trailer where they lived sat here on the banks of the South Tow River until flooding from Helene swept it away.
It was a flood zone, and it was raised up 5 feet up from the ground on a cement concrete blocks or whatever. And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful spot, nothing like what you see right now.
Search groups found the bodies of Anna's sister, 42-year-old Anastasia Navitnisegin, and her husband Dmitro. Her 73-year-old mother Tatiana, who was sick and bedbound, as well as her 13-year-old nephew Evgeny, were never found.
What is sad to me is that, you know, they escaped the Kherson in Ukraine, and they went through a very hard time to get here. And a lot of people helped them to get here. And it just said I couldn't keep them safe here. Kind of like feel that probably my fault.
Wiebe's husband Ryan shot this video from her home's porch on September 27th at 8:54 a.m. The first floor of the family home got completely flooded. Windows got smashed. One of the walls gave way to water. As the family was trying to escape, Wiebe kept thinking about her relatives. At the time, there was already no cell connection. Today, she remembers how her mom had asked to be buried in Ukraine.
We were talking about that just recently because my mother was already on hospice and they asked those type of questions. And we come up with that she wanted to be cremated. Some part of it she wanted to be spread around here, and part of it to go back to Ukraine.
Wiebe hopes to fulfill that request after she processes her loss. The storm is estimated to have caused over $50 billion worth of damage across the state. The Wiebe family is hoping for help, but has started a GoFundMe page to help start rebuilding their home. The family has raised over $49,000, but none of that will bring back Anna's loved ones. For Rafael Saaka in North Carolina, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa today was among African leaders who addressed the COP29 climate summit, where he spoke on how Zimbabwe has been impacted by El Nino-induced droughts and more.
Zimbabwe bears the scars of climate change and is currently experiencing one of the most devastating El Nino-induced droughts in history. The drought has negatively impacted nearly every aspect of life in Zimbabwe. My government, in April this year, declared a national state of disaster. The crisis extends beyond Zimbabwe and is affecting the entire Southern Africa region. Our reliance on hydroelectric power has also made our clean energy supply precarious. These cascading effects underscore the vulnerability of developing countries like Zimbabwe to climate change while contributing minimally to global emissions. The transition to renewable energy is non-negotiable, while a just transition combined with robust financial technological support for developing countries are critically important to drive the climate action agenda. As such, my country is implementing the nationally determined contribution implementation plan and investment framework to aid in our resource mobilization. Additionally, Zimbabwe recently developed a national carbon market framework which puts Article 6 compliance framework at the heart of Zimbabwe's climate change strategy. Zimbabwe welcomes the formal registration of the group of landlocked developing countries as a negotiating group in global climate processes. As we reflect on the commitments made at the recent Summit of the Future, I urge us all to align our climate actions with our broader vision for more just, peaceful, and inclusive order. Let us act decisively to build a legacy of hope, resilience, and shared prosperity on a healthy earth. I thank you.
That was President Emmerson Mnangagwa there addressing the 29th COP delegates in Baku, Azerbaijan. Now let's take a short break on that note. Please stay tuned. We will be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
For those that have just joined us, please note that we are streaming live on our Facebook pages, VOA Shona, VOA Studio 7, and VOA Ndebele. We are also live on YouTube, VOA Zimbabwe. Since decades, climate change and environmental factors have played a key factor in people's decision to migrate, including in Zimbabwe. According to a paper by International Organization for Migration, by 2050, up to 5% of Africa's population of around 2 billion people could be on the move due to the impacts of climate change. Considering that, predictions highlight that by 2050, Africa's youth population could reach up to 850 million, potentially making it the most affected demographic group due to their high population composition. Zimbabwe youths are facing a tough decision regarding their future, while many consider leaving the country in search of better opportunities. Others who have already relocated suggest that working, living, and schooling conditions abroad are not as easy as they seem. Now, to discuss this, we are joined by Mr. Tafadzwa Maganga, a public policy analyst based in Zimbabwe. You might also want to know he was part of this publication that I was just mentioning on the IOM platform. We also have author and artist Chennai Dunturu, currently based in Melbourne, Australia. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, let me start with you, Mr. Maganga, because you have been in this research and all the analysis that came through. As I read the IOM paper and I saw your name on it, I said, this is the man to talk to. Can we marry that to the day-to-day life of young people today? What is the situation?
Yeah, I think we need to first of all acknowledge that climate change is having an impact on the lives of young people in Africa and in Zimbabwe. And I think, as you mentioned earlier, young people comprise the largest demographic group that is being affected by the effects of climate change. As a result, they have to make tough choices of either staying home or to migrate. And migration has now become an adaptation strategy to the effects of climate change. So young people are now trying to migrate either within Zimbabwe or to search for greener pastures outside Zimbabwe. Hence, climate change is impacting the lives of young people and also bearing part in their decision-making concerning their migration and the ability to stay at home.
Mm-hmm. A very interesting breaking of the ice there. Now, let's go to Melbourne now. We're coming to Australia. Ms. Chennai, listen, I know you are in Australia right now. I know you have moved from Zimbabwe. And I understand you are doing a lot there to try and survive and make an impact in whatever you do. What is your take on youth migration? Let's start from there.
A youth migration, while it may seem like it's not significant, in the long run, it's starting to leave a brain drain in our country. If you notice, we have lost a lot of the key workforce, and they've all migrated, mostly like some of us, and some have gone to the UK. And this has left a big hole, a lack in our own resources towards our people. So this presents a challenging aspect in the long term. Our country needs our youth. We need to be back in Zimbabwe, but we can't because of these some of these factors that have been mentioned by Zafazwa. So it's a challenging aspect that should not be ignored. We need to retain our youth within our country. Maybe it's a matter of time when we get to do that, but not at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And then, Mr. Maganga, let's look at this from this angle now. The biggest drivers for migration, of course, you mentioned climate change there. You mentioned the need to seek for greener pastures. What else is driving young people to leave out of Zimbabwe in the present day?
Yeah, in the present day, young people in Zimbabwe would actually want to travel due to several factors, some of which are due to the circumstances that they are surviving. Like I have mentioned earlier, climate change is one of them. They need to search for greener pastures. There's also other reasons, such as the need for young people to explore and actually live life to their full potential. As we all know, Zimbabwe is not actually able to support much of the ambitions of various young people who seek to actually pursue various careers and do many other things such as business and the entrepreneurship. As a result, they now seek to migrate as a way of trying to reach their maximum potential. Some of the young people are actually fighting issues such as the politics and, you know, the persecution due to their political beliefs. Some of them do maybe to their sexual orientation and other things. So there are quite a number of drivers of migration in Zimbabwe. But chief among them is the impact of the economy on the lives of young people, as well as the impact of maybe climate change issues to do with food security and maybe other issues that can be associated to natural disasters and probably environmental degradation, and this can also be linked to climate change. But there are other factors that actually contribute towards the decision to move among young people.
Mm-hmm. Now let's come back to Ms. Chennai. How hard was it, in your own experience, to move from Zimbabwe to Australia? Tell us a little bit about your experience living in the diaspora as a young woman.
The most difficult part was settling in a different culture. Now, I grew up in Zimbabwe. Yes, I've been to a few countries, but knowing that this is my new home and the culture shock was, I'm still experiencing it, trust me. So that aspect has a toll on a lot of things, your mental health, just your general well-being. Although I had family, I had my brothers here and his family, but I'm not with him all the time. I'm not with them all the time. So getting to understand how people think here, what you can do, what you cannot do, you know, what you can't say and what you can say. all those presented a huge drawback when I started settling in here, and the issue of what is normal in my own culture is not normal here. So all this adapting to those different dynamics was really challenging. And the fact that this is a very diverse place. There's Sudanese, there are many Sudanese, many teenage Sudanese, Assyrians, you name them. So just getting to blend in that respect required a lot of stamina, I must say.
Wow, that's quite a lot there. If let's take a quick caller. I've got a gentleman in South Africa. Let's hear what is the situation like in South Africa. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Evan.
Oh, is this Dr. Chambwera?
Yes.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming in. Listen, we would like to shed a picture of how things are looking in terms of youth migration in South Africa and the region at large.
So South Africa currently is dealing with an influx of immigrants from the region. As you may be aware, there's a lot that is happening in Mozambique at the moment. Mm-hmm. But that's also apart from, you know, the usual the migration from Zimbabwe and other countries in the region, as well as from beyond the region. And these are all young people that are looking for opportunities that are scarce in their own countries. So you've got people coming from as far as East Africa, West Africa, to South Africa, because it is the biggest economy in Southern Africa, but also in Africa. So there is quite a lot of movement of young people trying to seek for opportunities in the country. And it's unfortunate that quite a good number of them come in undocumented, while there's also a good number of them that do come documented as well.
Mm-hmm. One more question for you, Doc, before we let you go. Now, how easy is it for young people who are coming from all over the continent into South Africa to settle in, be it for work, be it for school, be it for opportunities?
So before the government of national unity, it had become quite difficult. Speaking to many young people, they found it very difficult to obtain documents to settle. But that seems to have eased a little bit, because even at that time, there was quite a backlog in terms of processing of permits. Now, there seems to be a lot of progress that has been made. And once your documents are in order, it is relatively easier to settle in the country, especially if you are from the region, because, you know, cultures are almost the same or almost similar across the country. So it is relatively easier, but it also depends on what each individual will be doing or where they are trying to settle in. But we do see a lot of young people that settle well, and though even those that are studying, they do settle well into the community this side, yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chambwera, for your contribution, painting a picture there of how the situation is like in South Africa. Moving back to Zimbabwe, let's come back to you, Mr. Maganga. Now, what are the challenges involved in young people making that decision to either leave the country or stay in the country?
Yeah, there are quite a number of challenges that actually impact the decision to move or to stay at home. Chief among them is the financial cost of traveling. We realize that most of the people that wanted to travel in the past few years, maybe to countries like the United Kingdom and other countries, through within the National Health Service and around, actually paying large sums of money for them to travel to those countries. This is also associated with maybe the visa fees and other issues. Acquiring even a passport in Zimbabwe, I think the minimum rate for around 170 a year, among other things. So this actual Africans are beginning to move across borders. Locally, some of the people can't even afford bus fares to travel from the rural areas to into urban areas. Some actually have family ties that they need to break before they decide to move. As a result, they spend a lot of time trying to deal with social and cultural issues that have to do with their migration, leaving their children behind, leaving their families, and many other things. So there are quite a number of issues that actually have an effect on one's decision to move. They can be financial, they can be social, they can be cultural, but those are some of the issues that most Zimbabweans have to deal with when it comes to migrating, either within Zimbabwe or going outside the borders.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of good pointers there you are giving. Let me come back to you, Ms. Chennai. Mr. Maganga mentioned issues to do with the family component, the family unit component. I would like to throw that your way. How do you make up for being away from your family and friends and still be able to thrive and do your school and do your work and live a normal, sane life in a foreign land?
Normal life can be not the right word there, but you just try. You try to maintain, you know, the WhatsApp calls with the family, the Facebook messenger chats. So I'm largely relying on social media just to be in touch. It's the cheaper option to be in touch with family. And also just hanging out in community, like going to church on Sundays, at least you know you meet like-minded people. Because in trying to be with family, that longing to be with someone familiar, we may end up in the wrong hands. So at least if I go to church, I know I'm with like-minded people. And then that also brings that familiarity, that this is something similar to what I had home. So that cushions my longing for family and inclusion. Otherwise, I'm just relying on social media and, you know, the Facebook just to keep in touch. And that can be difficult because the time difference, people want to sleep, you want to talk to them, then vice versa. And that's really draining, I tell you. And it's hard to understand. You know, people sometimes can't understand. I also don't understand. I want to talk to you. Why can't you pick my calls? But, you know, so all those little dynamics really make it a struggle still, but we just try.
All right. Thank you for that. And let me ask you, Mr. Maganga, to come in as we wrap up and close. Please give us a few words to the young men out there who is planning to migrate, who is intending to leave the country or intending to come back to the country from abroad. Would you have something to say to them today in closing?
I don't have much to say except that maybe for those who are planning to move outside Zimbabwe, I can just say take your time before you make the decision and make sure you are prepared for some of the challenges that come with migration. The same also may apply to those trying to come back to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe hasn't changed its fortune for quite some time, so you must also be prepared with some of the challenges that are associated with returning back home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's all I can say.
Thank you very much. Let me thank both of our guests again, Ms. Chennai Ndunduru, all the way in Melbourne, in Australia, an author and artist in her own right, and many other things. And of course, Tafadzwa Maganga as well, a very interesting author, policy analyst based in Zimbabwe. And this brings us to the end of our show today. Our listeners and viewers, thank you as well for being with us. I am signing off in Washington. This is Evans Zininga.